Hey everyone, so this is the 9th episode in the World in a Satin Bag podcast. Thanks for listening. Of course, if you've been watching basketball, then you'll have noticed that the Mavs have won their third game, which is awesome. So suck it, Heat. And with that, I'm going to shut up and I'm going to go straight to the story. Chapter 9 of Omens and Night Walks. James opened his eyes and saw the familiar stone ceiling of the keep. But he didn't wake, not entirely. The furl called to him from the back of his mind, beckoning him to wait. And he did, sitting there in a paralyzed state of consciousness, fully aware of where he was, but unable to move. The airy voice of the furl hissed in the back of his mind, molding from the imaginary air into a thin, ghostly voice. "James," it said. He tried to speak, but his lips were stiff, and instead, the words found their way into his mind, responding in his own voice. "Who are you?" "I was once known as Dulian of Northshire, but that was long ago." "I don't understand." "Every furl has a guiding voice, a connection to the one who forged the binding magic. But there is no time for such things. A great darkness is coming." "I know. Luthien will send his assassins." "I think a worse fate awaits you and the people of Treia. I see the earth wet with blood and the skies scorched by fire."
"Something worse than Luthien?"
"I cannot say. I cannot see the future as he does, but the omens speak of death, shadow moons, and talk of lifens. These are things parents once said to their children." There is a long pause, accompanied by a deep breathing, throbbing as if in the distance. "Those who have questioned you were right to do so. From the moment the furl touched your skin, I could sense something great, something forgotten." P. and Triska appeared in his field of vision. He saw them like moving glass sculptures speaking to him, but he could not hear them over the deep, resonating breathing of Dulian.
"I don't understand any of this. What do you mean by something forgotten? I've never been here before."
"We will speak of these things again. This is our first contact. I'm afraid it will not be a long one. Such things never are."
"When will I hear from you again?"
"When you desire my counsel, you must achieve this state after slumber. Only then can you fully hear me. Push away from the waking world at the moment of waking. Call to me and I will come."
"Why did you choose me?"
"I didn't." Before James could inquire further, a high-pitched whistle filled his head. He cringed, his body folding into a fetal position on its own until the pressure released with a loud pop. The paralysis broke. The waking world hit him like a brick, smashing into him wildly. His arms and legs moved as if they had minds of their own. The spasm went on into his chest until finally it stopped and he could breathe. His head swam through the ether of blurry vision.
"James," P said, concern deep in his voice, "speak to me, my boy." For a while James lay there, looking into their faces. Triska no longer beamed brightly at him, her face a contorted with worry lines. P, too, appeared consumed by a lined face.
"Come on now, snap out of it." P shook him slightly. Then it seemed as if everything came back into focus. He blinked his eyes a few times, looked from P to Triska and back again. The world became a sea of sensation as he regained his limbs and mind.
"I think I'm all right," he said.
"Thank goodness," Triska breathed a sigh of relief.
"What happened?"
"If I'm not mistaken, our little James has discovered his voice." P's eyes signaled the smile before it reached his lips, while Triska's shined with enthusiasm. James twitched his lip in confirmation.
"Oh, who is it?"
"Dulian of Northshire."
"Oh, what wonder," P said.
P and Triska clasped hands like two little children and laughed.
"Who is he?"
P stopped. Luthien would know that name well. He stalled Luthien's first invasions at the Fire Rim. He sent that dark fool back to Tirlin Pur with his tail firmly between his legs.
Such luck this little boy has.
How is this luck? Anger welled up inside him. Look at everything that has happened. Laura was taken. I've been marked. How can you say this is all luck? Darkness has overcome the land, and you think it luck? I'm a curse here.
No.
But he cut P off and sat up. P, everything I've ever known is gone. I may never return home. I could be here forever. And what if we can't save my friend? What is going to happen to her? She's the only one I have.
You have us, Triska said softly.
It's not the same. She is all I have, all I truly have. I have nobody but friends I hardly know. If I can't save Laura, I cannot return home. I can't go back without her. She is my best friend and the last bit of home I have left.
Then he dropped down into the bed, tears welling up in his eyes. All that had happened and would happen fell down on him like a mountain of cold stone. He sobbed, unable to control his emotions any longer. Nobody judged him for it, he could sense that, and that allowed him to weep freely. Then, slowly, he calmed himself. The tears stopped, he wiped his face. What was I thinking when I came here? All the doubt he had pushed away in his training with Darl now pulsed like a cancerous bulge around his heart. P leaned forward and took his arm, patting it soothingly. You did a noble thing. The only way you could save your friend was to come here. That is bravery at its best. Triska hugged him. He smelled the cinnamon in her hair and the lavender on her skin. James, you brave little boy, fret not. I promise you that if there is a way to get you home, all of us will help you find it. She tilted into a sitting position on his bed, a tear forming in the corner of her eye. She brushed it away. Trust in this new friendship. We're here for you. James mustered up a smile and sniffled. He wasn't alone, not really. Home was as far as it could possibly be, unattainable. Yet, a great many were willing to help him in some way. That thought might not assuage his doubts and guilt and fear, but it clouded the dismal reality set before him, as if it were a cloak laid over a light. He knew he wasn't truly alone, and had always known, but this moment had been the first time when he could say what he felt deep down. And it was a relief to let it loose, to tell them all his fears and worries. It was a greater relief to find that they were there for him, even if the path he had set up for himself was one that looked impossible. I'm sorry I yelled at you. Feeling terrible about how he had acted, P and Triska nodded their heads, and he knew from the way they looked at him that they harbored no ill will towards him for his outburst. I think I should get more sleep. Maybe that will help lighten the mood. He tried to smile, but found he didn't have the strength. P and Triska managed the motion on their own, finding it in themselves, he assumed, to hear his joke. They left him in his room, and he slid the hood of the cowl over his head and slept once more, praying he would have no more interruptions to the mundane event. James woke up in agony. The salve had worn off, leaving his body aching where thick bruises had already formed. He groaned, but avoided touching the sensitive skin. The salve had worked wonders to alleviate his pain, and had even reduced the swelling and prevented his bruise from forming into something much worse. But he was not used to the pain or bruises from wooden sword fights. After a time, he got used to the pain and managed to swing himself out of bed and waddle to a mirror along the wall. Lifting his shirt, he tried to see the bruise. It stretched across his back in a long, thick line, slightly purple and black. Then he searched for the knot on his head, but found it less painful and far smaller than he had expected. Darl had knocked him out. Yet he understood now that the blow did less damage than his exhaustion. He had been nearly ready to pass out anyway. James walked towards the window, opened it to draw the cold air of the night into the room, and peered into the ward. The torches were lit, but they did little to hide the darkness of the sky, where the moon was still consumed by shadow. The gates had been closed, two soldiers walked the walls on opposite ends, four were down near the gate talking, and four more were in each of the wall towers. A couple of burly laughs told him that there were other soldiers out of his view on the opposite end of the keep. He knew then that he had slept for most of a day and a good portion of the night. But now he was awake, and the pain made him even less willing to sleep, at least until he could find more of the salve and dress his wounds. Something glimmered beyond the keep and caught his attention through the corner of his eye. He turned, but there was nothing there, and then there was something. A black shape leapt and crawled its way along the roofs of several buildings, slipping in and out of the light of the torches strewn across the cityscape. It moved in silence, bounding like an animal until it disappeared below his vision. He listened for a sound, any sound, but heard nothing. Below, the soldiers seemed oblivious, even those on the walls who were facing into the city. He searched for the creature again. Nothing. Maybe he had seen an illusion, a trick of the moon's shadow face or the torches. But he wouldn't take the risk. He had to warn the soldiers, just in case. His voice rang out in the ward, echoing off the stone walls. He pointed to the east, calling out the location of the creature. At first, the soldiers directly below him paid no attention. Then a command came from the northeasternmost wall tower, and the entire castle bustled with activity. One soldier pointed to the east, but a moment later pointed north. All fell silent. No arms pointed, no arrows were strung. James felt as if everything were moving in slow motion. Then the black figure appeared on the northern wall, clawing its way up and over the crenellations. It bore no resemblance to a man, but more like a four-legged mutation. Its face was wide and scrunched up like a cat, fur slicked back along a muscular canine body. two feline ears curved back into furry points along the crest of its head, and rather than a proportional mouth, it bore a wide, gaping grin filled with dozens of pointed, blood-stained teeth. Each of its 4 feet ended in thick claws stained black by blood and dirt and flesh, all of which still clung to the tips from when it had last taken prey. A smooth tail swung fluidly behind it. The creature made little noise as it snuck up behind the closest soldier. In one motion it bit down, taking the man's head in its mouth. The soldier had no time to cry out before the creature reduced his head into a mass of flesh and blood. Another soldier nearby suffered a similar fate, his neck ripped to pieces by a swift slash from the creature's claws, which cut his cry short. And then it turned, and James saw its yellow eyes in the darkness, glaring up at him over its dripping teeth. A clear path lay before it and the keep. It took 3 enormous bounds and slipped out of sight. James breathed in to send out the alert, but a third soldier beat him to it. Soon 6 of the castle's men drew up bows and arrows and launched them across the face of the keep. He closed the glass and latched it, thinking that perhaps it would stall the creature. Ear-splitting screeches forced him to cringe as each of the creature's claws dug into the stone. The dim thuds of the arrows resonated through the walls. He heard deep, wet breaths growing in intensity, followed by a sepulchral pant that gave him an impression of what the creature would sound like if it growled. A hollow, saliva-filled lion's roar. James fled for the door. He flung it open, but it crashed shut before he could step through, nearly taking his fingers with it. Pulling on the latch did no good, and he knew that the wood had been fused to the wall by magic. He searched the room in desperation, hoping to find something he could use to defend himself. In a corner he found a broom. Leaning on the end, he snapped the straw head from the handle and turned the broom into a makeshift spear. He backed up against the far wall near the door, holding his weapon with shivering hands. The thing clawing its way up the wall was after him. There was no doubt in his mind about that fact. This creature, whatever it was, had to be the first of Luthien's assassins, and he regretted more than ever that he had not spent his first day of training with P. Now, more than ever, he needed to know how to channel the Furl's power. The clawing and scraping grew in intensity until, at last, the creature appeared in the window. It took one look at James and seemed to grin maliciously. It tore the frame and glass from the wall with 2 quick swipes of its clawed forearm. A loud smash signaled the final demise of the window, the glass pulverized by the fall. His heart leapt into his throat. Sweat rolled down the side of his face. He watched as the creature clawed its way through the window. A pair of blood-red, cat-like eyes overwhelmed him. Fresh blood and bits of flesh fell from its mouth. The claws clicked on the stone as if counting the steps, each tip tapping. Each step it took made James flinch. He clasped the broom handle like a sword, forgetting that he had fashioned it like a spear. The creature made a half-circle around him, moving back and forth, as if it were playing a cat's game. "This is the boy Luthien desires?" It spoke with an impish grumble, like a cougar's growl spoken in a child's laugh. James shivered. "Just a boy, afraid."
What do you want?"
His body shook. He fought for control. The creature laughed, circling.
"I've come to bring you to Luthien, safe and sound, though I'd much rather taste your flesh and lap your blood from the floor."
It stepped closer and circled again.
"You can put that tool down. I would prefer to bring you to him unharmed, but a bloody boy would cause me no shame."
He squeezed the handle until his knuckles turned white and grimaced.
"Foolish."
Then it laughed and lunged forward. A huge claw swiped through the air and ripped the handle from James's hands, and a moment later the creature lunged at him. It dug its claws into his shoulders and pushed him hard against the wall. He yelped, the warmth of his blood trickling down his chest the only reprieve from the pain. The giant mouth of teeth sat within inches of his face, dribbling blood down the front of his clothes. The creature sniffed him, and then licked the side of his cheek. It seemed to take satisfaction in the act. Eyes closed, a faint purr emanating from somewhere within its muscular throat. James tried to recall what he had read about magic. Imagine the spell, then cast. He thought that over and over until he had the courage. He imagined a force throwing the creature away from him. The event played in his mind. Then he placed his hands out and tried to cast. Nothing. No energy erupted from his hands. Sudden dizziness came over him. The dizziness grew exponentially, and he sensed his consciousness slipping. A presence lingered in his mind, something other than his Furl. Magic left his body. He could feel it, pouring out of him with his very life in tow. The creature bellowed, breathing in deep breaths. "It's sucking away my life." His senses diminished, everything became a whir. He tried desperately to cling onto the last bit of magic left. Then an explosion singed the air. Through his blurred vision, he saw splinters of wood sprinkle the room, thrown wildly in every direction and leaving behind a dark gray smoke. Something silver appeared and slashed down through the creature's paw. It roared, shattering the air like a winter storm. Then it leapt back, removing its remaining claw from James's shoulder. James dropped to the floor, unable to stand on his own. Darl burst into view, swinging a sword. Closely behind him was Pea, and then Triska and Gammon. Together, Triska and Gammon grabbed him by the shoulders and dragged him from the room. In the last moments before they pulled him around the corner, he saw furniture fly across the room, crashing into the creature and forcing it back. And then it was gone, disappeared into the night, chased away by arrows and the calls of soldiers. Pea and Darl were fast behind Triska and Gammon. James couldn't hear their voices, but he could tell that they were speaking to him, even as his vision grew dimmer and the walls warped and bled. But he stayed awake, staring up into their blurry faces or at the bleeding walls or into nothing at all. His arms refused to respond, and his legs were little more than weights now. But the blood on his chest, his blood, still sent warm shivers through his body. Gammon lifted James over his shoulder and carried him down the steps into the dining area, and then set him down on a mat of straw. The room filled with magic, and so too did his body with a warmth that began with his stomach, and soon soothed his head and skin of its pain. Then, with what little energy he had left, he pushed himself into paralysis, into the place between sleeping and waking, calling out the name he knew so well, Dulian. And that is it, episode 9, chapter 9 of the World in the Sandbag podcast. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to donate, you can do that in two ways. I keep saying this every episode, but so be it. You can easily just go to my blog, wisb.blogspot.com. There's a little chip-in thing on the side. Or you can just send it straight to my PayPal address, which is my email, arconna@yahoo.com. And, of course, if you donate, you actually do get something out of this. Just an idea, $10 actually gets you the ebook version of this for free. If you happen to donate $10, and $1 gets you actually an acknowledgement in the book, which is also cool. So, and of course, I'd love to hear what you think. So if you like these podcasts, let me know, please. I'd love to know what you think. Please also give me, you know, a rating on iTunes, since this is now on iTunes. So, all right, I'm going to shut up now and let you guys go. So have a good night, day, whatever time it is, and yay Mavs.